I was just speaking on the subject of satsang. Joining the Holy Congregation of the Saints, it is a school in which you are not only taught but given this demonstration of the God within you. Any subject that you learn further, if you want education, outdoor education, you have to go to a school or a college. You want to learn about your physical body, how it works, how it is retarded, and how that can be resumed to normal working. You have to go to a school where the subject of man body is taught, how it is, can be developed and have a sound health. If you want to learn engineering, you will have to go to a school where some engineer is there to teach you. So really this school where you are now sitting, it is a school of how to meet God. School is one where somebody is sitting who knows God, who sees God, who is competent to give others some demonstration, some capital to start with. So satsang is a place, is a school where somebody is there who sees God, who knows God, who can also competent to give some demonstration of the God within you. Only such a school is called a satsang. Satsang word means actually the uniting of the soul with the God pervading power which is ever existent. That only is possible when our soul is just analyzed from mind and outgoing faculties. When we know ourselves, only we are in a position to know the God who is pervading all, who is controlling all, in whom we have our living and being. So this is a school where you are attending, which is called satsang. We are joined here to have our contact with the God within us and everywhere. That is possible only when the man, somebody is there who sees God and makes others see God. The God in man or man in God sees God everywhere in everybody, and those also begin to see God in everybody. And it is the God man who can give you contact and demonstration of the God within you and everywhere. So you are teaching to the stars. When you rise above body consciousness, to know yourself and then know the over-self controlling you within the body and controlling all universe under this control. So, if you want to join, to know God, we must join some school where there is somebody who knows God, who sees God and is competent to give you something to start with, some demonstration of it, which is already within you. So main purpose of coming to a, for instance, say, this cloth seller who sells only silken goods, you go to him and want from him iron metals, will he be able to give you? No. If you go to a school where machinery is being sold made of iron, you see, and you want them to tell you how to know God, will they be able to give you any demonstration of that? No, not really. Similarly, when you go to a school to know God, that school is only called a school where there is somebody who has the contact with God and is competent to give you something to start with. So when you find any such place, how can you derive the full benefit of attending that school? When you go, just forget everything behind you, your heart and home, your environment, your own physical self as well. Be there. When you find any God in man sitting over there, just put in whole attention into his eyes, into the place, ground of the soul of the God in him, you see. Eyes are the windows of the soul. When the soul is just saturated with the love of God and shining with the glory of God, you see, if you look into it, become receptive, you will learn the ABC which is given without spoken words. That's the main thing. You come to a school, so much so you begin to think of him. You become, as you think, so you become. Such a man is called a Guru Mukh. He can derive the full benefit of attending the school of satsang. So you are fortunate, those who come here, they should just forget the past and the outward environment, everything. Be here only you and the God in man in front of you. Become receptive, forgetting your body and all outward things. If your body is sitting there, your mind is roving about outside to different things, you cannot derive the benefit of attending the school of satsang. Again, I may tell you in full and use, satsang is a school. It can be rightly called a satsang if somebody is there who has seen God, who knows God, who has contact with God, who is inebriated with the love of God, you see, love overflowing from him, radiating from him. That school can only be called a satsang. If you want to derive the full benefit of attending that school, for that you have to forget all your environments, all your those who are sitting around you, and even just you forget your own physical body. Be attentive to the God and man in front of you. That way you learn many things by radiation, by being receptive. Soul speaks to soul without spoken words. There you get two things together. One, theory also explained by spoken words, and also the given the some capital to start with. That comes through the eyes. Through the eyes of the expectant one who comes to attend the school for the purpose of knowing God. Such schools are rare. There are many schools there. People are, they give us only the past history, some theory as expounded by other rishis and so forth. They might give you some quotations from the past masters, but that's only for the purpose of understanding, unless you can have some demonstration to start with, how can you derive the full benefit of it? The man comes up and gives you a wonderful talk on the subject of how the business can be run safely. Very wonderful talk he gives. But to the people around him, they have got no money to start with. What will your lecture do? If you are able to give them some capital to start with, only then your lecture will be give some substantial benefit to the people who attend to you. Similarly, this is a school of spirituality, how to contact with God. First, the theory is explained by reference to the old masters who came in the past, who did see God and made others see God. Son knows the Father and others whom the Son revealed. That God resides in every heart, that's the controlling power, keeping the soul in the body. He gives reference to that, to make the, those who are attending to understand what is what. But that alone won't do. There must be somebody who is above feelings, emotions, and drawing inferences. He sees God and makes others to develop an eye to enable him to see the God within him. Something to start with. I've just explained to you the purpose of this school we are attending. It is a school of satsang. Contact with ever unchangeable permanence within God. For that no question outer rightness to such not required. No outer basis are required. As a man you should come derived of all outer formation, badges and everything. Forget everything common again. And learn at the feet of somebody who knows God, you see, who can, is competent to give you something to start with. So first thing is the theory is to be understood. Those masters who came in the past, they did see God, they did have a vision of God. They also were competent to give some thing to start with, some capital to start with, those who met, to those who met with this. That very theory is explained also now, that demonstration, who is competent to give you some demonstration of it. So you are fortunate, I would say, you are attending a school where something to start with is given, with the grace of God, you see. But now if you want to derive the full benefit of it, what will you have to do? You will have to be receptive. That will start by following, by just by keeping commandments of the God in man, you see, of the man in God, giving instructions, teaching about God. So for that, you see, you have come here, you are fortunate, make the best use of it. When you come, forget everything of your heart and homes and outer environments, and also when you are here, forget your body as well. Be fully receptive by looking into the eyes of the God in man, you see. I speak to soul, I speak, soul speaks through the eye, through the soul, the other body, who are receptive. So spirituality cannot be taught but caught like infection through eyes. You are fortunate, you have such a school with the grace of God, but it is for you to make the best use of attending the school by attending in a way I just explained to you. So remain in whatever cause, creed or color you are, that makes no difference, because all the same you are man first. These badges you are wearing only on the outer body. Constituting your cause, you belong to such and such religion, such and such country. That makes no difference to the spiritual man, you see. You are man first, physical body, with equal rights from God above, and further you are conscious entity, you see. You are in soul body, the soul has got the same, is of the same essence as the God overhead, Jah for the ocean of all consciousness. As man you are one, as soul you are one, as worshipper of the same God overhead you are worshipper of the same one God. So when you go to love spirituality, you go to him as a man, not as badges. The badges of this religion you are carrying, you see, forget everything. That is what he says. So soul seeks to soul, those who are receptive, they derive the full benefit of it. So something, theory precedes practice, and theory can be explained most explicitly by someone who has lived up to it. Not only by reference to the books or quotations from different scriptures, but you have seen and can give you what they have seen and enable others also to see something to start with. What they are taught is God is light. They begin to have very first day some light. They hear the voice of God and others also are unable to just have some experience to become audible of the voice of God. This is what is given in the school of satsang. This only. I was just talking about, you see, what is love. Everybody says, I love God, man. You see, I love my master, I love this and that. But what is love? Love is the fruit of a tree, you see. It is the ultimate goal, which develops, comes up within us. Whatever we start, there are other steps, we lead to love. If we love with all our, we say love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength. Heart is one or two. Heart is only one. You can only give it to somebody. If you give away your heart to somebody, then what remains to be given? You see? Then you'll think that way what he thinks. Not your own scheming or anything, not the least, you see. This is the ultimate goal. Lord Krishna said, O my disciple, heart is only one that Lord Krishna has taken away. And then, who else will love God, you see? That has already been given to the God in man. Then nothing remains to be given to God now separately, you see. So first our heart should be, what you say, not broken into pieces. That should be summed up into one. When it is only, I mean complete, not broken into pieces, only then you can give. Our master once, you see, he was giving a talk, he said, already if any of you can give your heart, you just can go to heaven. One man stood up, well, I give my heart. Then he said, is heart in your control? Have you controlled your heart? He said, no, then how can you give it? You can give only something which is in your control, in your possession. No, heart is led away by outgoing faculties. Here, there, everywhere. Well, that is, you see, concentrated. How can you give it? We have no control over our heart. Our heart is dragged away in so many ways. So I was just talking about love. You see, that is the ultimate fruit of a fruit tree. There are steps leading to that. So first step is, we wish, you see. We like to have something. It's only liking, not only wish. Heart is given only when you withdraw it from all outside things. and it is under your control, you see. So there are steps leading to that. What we have got now, it is only, we wish we like, let it be done like that, you see. That is a better thing. But it is not yet done. That's mine. So there are steps leading to that. The first step is, if you love me, keep my commandments. What are the commandments? You know? Everybody knows? Love thy God with all thy heart. The word heart is there. With all thy heart, not pieces. Any heart which is cut into pieces, here, there and everywhere. So let it be complete first, you see. Only then you can hear. We love God only out of some liking or wishing, wishful thoughts. Wishful thoughts, you might say. So first thing, keep my commandments. For instance, you go, even the policeman in charge of the stop, if the president stops, that's order. If anyone whom you love, always stop. Stop there. Don't take further step. But do we keep his commandment? No. Then where is the love? We anchor after love. We have wishful thoughts to have love. But we have not got love yet. We have not laid the first stone of the building too. Foundation starts when you keep commandments. Then he says, all right, devote regular time to your meditations. Weed out all imperfections within you from day to day. We say we have got no time to keep diary. What to speak of love, you see? We are not even started as yet. Further, if you wish to have thought with somebody, love with somebody, then it is told, you see, of one Majnu. He was a great lover of one Lala, you see. She was a princess. Once he was just, you see, hugging and just that the feet of a dog, he was just hugging and just with the mouth, he was just giving love to the dog on his face and everything. People are, what are you doing? Are you going mad? Said, no, this dog, I have seen him sometime going in the street of my Lala, whom I love, you see. If he can love even dogs, going, just walking someday in the street in which his beloved Lala was living, if he love for somebody, for Master, say, for God, anybody who is going there, will naturally, to those who come to the Master, isn't it? We'll never find faults, criticizing. We'll just become humble, you see? And we love any, even the dogs who go there, just catch their feet too. This is a symbol that you are growing love for your beloved, you see? For your Master. Do we do? This is one of the symbols, I would say. Symptoms are symbols. To show that you are having some love for somebody. These are the foundation stones. Not love as yet, mind that. Love is giving away of your heart. Heart is one. When that is given away to somebody, then what else remains? Even, I tell you, Maulana Rum says, when you accepted your Master, once for all, even the Master, you see, even the Prophet and God both are there in him, you see. They are not without him, they are one in that. So our respect goes to God. Once when we give where that God is manifested, it is just giving to God or anybody, you see. You understand? As I told you in the very beginning, love is the fruit of a tree. First we start with wishful thoughts, liking, to have something. By comparative, say by discrimination, you see, or by reading scriptures, whom should we love? Soul should love God, because the conscious entity, it must go to all consciousness that is natural. It has been tied to the outer world, only things. Result is, we come and go again where we are attached. So if you want to have love for God, that everybody in his, I think, to his own, from his own level of thinking, he is convinced that he is loving God. God we have not seen, God has manifested in somewhere at the human pole. If we say we love him, then how the love foundation stone will start from where? By keeping his commandments. First. Second, when you love somebody, even anybody who goes there and lives there, you love him too. We criticize, we sometimes fight, even with those who are going there within themselves, then where is the love for the Master or for God? These are the stepping stones. But there is further thing, something. This is the first thing. When you grow love for God or God-man, it's one and the same thing. That you will be having, what you say, at the heart of heart you will be hankering to have him. You see? You cannot forget you would like to have somebody, the company of somebody who talks about him. You see? His first-hand experiences, or who has been with him, naturally that comes out. Further, you would like to be just near him, as near as possible. Then even you are not there when somebody speaks of him, your heart becomes full and overflows through your eyes. You see? These are symptoms that you are having love now. Now the fruit, these are the blossoms coming up, blossom coming up, which will turn into fruit. Mm-hmm. If the rain is expected, first you will have clouds. If there are no clouds, where is the rain? Where there are no blossoms, where is the fruit? You follow me? So as I told you, love is the fruit. Everybody says, I love. Love can be only have one idea, not two, three, four. That cannot be, heart can be split up into parts and give one here, one there, one there. Not. So as I told you, these are the steps. One, keep the commandments. Second, weeding out all imperfections. Third, devoting time to the spiritual practices. Then have the company of somebody who just reminds you of your ideal. Avoid all other company of all others in whose society you are attached to the world or forget him. You see? If you don't get such like society, better live all alone. All alone. Live with this Master speaking through books, through scriptures. It's better there. Then further, what the further symbol that you are having love now nearer, your heart will feel very separation, you see? You will be hankering to see him. You always, some like even you hear of him, your whole hairs on your body will stand, you see? Sensation like you feel. And further, even when you hear of him, even then your heart becomes full and tears roll down from your cheeks. These are the symptoms showing that the fruit is nearing. These are blossoms. Ultimately, when fruit comes, you are for the Master, Master is for you. These are steps, you see. We have to now judge what we do. We cannot hear anything, you see, which is not according to scriptures, according to what God will say. Even against any propaganda which may be carried out. You see? You follow now my point? We say love, we love God, we love our Master, this is all right. But where are the outer scriptures? How it starts? Love is only giving your heart once for all. That heart cannot be retaken and given to somebody else.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was from two morning talks. The first was titled True Satsang, given by Master on November 25th, 1967, and then it ended with What is Love, given on January 6th, 1968. Our reader this evening is Christine Clevenger. Hello, Christine.
Hello, David.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Good evening to everyone. I'm going to continue reading in the Wheel of Life, Chapter 5. Sant Satguru, or the Master Saint, is the Holy Father. He comes from afar and for the benefit of all, the sinners and the virtuous alike, for both are equally bound in the worldly fetters, maybe of steel or of gold. He loves all, and love leads to forgiveness. Never fear to approach him simply because you are a sinner. He would not allow or hand over any of his children to the reformatory or the prison house for correction, nor submit him to any of the third degree methods. A loving and kindly father would never do this. The master would himself scold or give a little of bodily suffering to correct his erring child, and would yet ever remain with him, although unseen, upholding him from within until the short period of trouble is over. He acts just like a master potter who, while gently striking the pitcher on the wheel from without with a mallet to give proper shape to it, keeps the other hand inside to save it from breaking. The Master's love is unbounded. The kingdom of a darvish is one of grace. The duty of a superintendent in a jail is to keep the prisoners in prison, to chasten and to reform them. Similarly, the aim of the deities and divine incarnates, or avatars, has always been to keep men tied to themselves by showering the gifts of various riddhis and siddhis on them. This refers to the granting of gifts, boons, favors, wealth, ease, and comfort in worldly vocations, and giving superhuman powers for doing good or ill. These limited salvations and comforts they grant to their devotees are only up to the stage which they themselves have attained, and they may ever permit nearness of sojourn in the various regions wherein they preside. They cannot help in the bringing about of union with the Almighty, because these subordinate powers are themselves deprived of this highest privilege. The siddhis, or extraordinary powers referred to above, are yogic powers, which of themselves come to aspirants after truth with a little sadhana or practice, but these are positive hindrances in the way to God realization. For one is generally tempted to indulge in miracles like thought reading, foretelling, transvisions, transpenetrations, wish fulfilling, spiritual healing, hypnotic trances, magnetic influence, and the like. These cities are of eight kinds. Anima, to become invisible to all external eyes. Mahima, to extend body to any size. Garima, to make body as heavy as one wishes. Lagima, to make body as light as one may like. Prapti, to get anything one likes by mere wishing. Ishtva, to attain all glories for the self. Prakaima, to be able to fulfill the wishes of others. Vashitva, to bring others under influence and control. A practical Mahatma, on the other hand, having access to the highest domain, forgives, liberates, and grants admittance to the kingdom of God during one's lifetime, provided, of course, one is completely determined to surrender oneself to him and do his bidding with a loving and a sincere heart. This is rather a difficult task for those who are in the habit of obeying the dictates of their own minds. It is the fluctuating nature of the uncultured and uncontrolled mind to accept one thing at one time and to revolt against the same at another time. The saints, like Mamana Rumi, even go so far as to say, "Come, come again, and still again, even if thou hast broken thy troth 1,000 times. For there is always a place for thee in the saving grace of a master saint." Once you have become master's own, he will never abandon you, although you may succumb to weakness in a moment of trial and tribulation and leave him or go astray from the path. The Christ power has declared, "I shall never leave thee nor forsake thee till the end of the world." He has his own law of love and mercy to deal with everyone at every moment. Even though one may prolong one's course of self-discipline by spurning the Master's love, the source of all peace and glory lies above the physical body and inside man. One who has no inner peace should give proper nourishment to the self, the mind, and the soul. The word or nam is the true comforter, the peace giver, and the bestower of tranquility and salvation. The common dictionary meaning of the word salvation may not be taken as mere release from sin. It is freeing oneself from the cycle of births and deaths and union of the Spirit with the Lord and spiritual life in eternity. The average man makes a hoax of salvation. So also do various sectarian circles. The founders of the various religious orders have related their own spiritual experiences of the inner regions to which they had had an access, and described them as the climax or the ultimate goal of salvation and life everlasting. The Master Saint is a visitor of all the heavenly regions and describes his actual position sometimes in the form of parables. He, in no ambiguous words, declares, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." The saints, then, stand for eternal salvation during one's present life, and not after death, for who knows what may happen then? Salvation after death may prove a mere mirage in the long run, and it is no good living one's life in a state of perpetual and continuous suspense. if death is a precondition, then salvation is but a figment of one's imagination. A real saint releases the soul from all bondage of births and deaths right here and now. He trusts in the death in life or liberation in one's lifetime, which is technically called Jivanmukti. The soul then can commune with the Ineffable One while in the body and ultimately merges in the Almighty God at the time of final snapping of the cords within. It is generally thought that one gets salvation after physical death. The term death, however, means and includes temporary and volitional withdrawal of spirit current from the physical body, and not only final disintegration and decomposition of the component parts of the physical body, as is accepted in common parlance. It is absurd to think that one who has been worldly minded during his lifetime will instantly become a freed soul at death. The morally disciplined spiritual devotees do attain to salvation while alive and thus conquer death, the last enemy of mankind, in life. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, declared St. Paul. A pandit in life remains a pandit after death also, my master used to say. To wind up karmas and to relieve the soul of all its shackles is not the portfolio of any politician, diplomat, statesman, or minister, or even of any government. Even the avatars, incarnations of the higher power, are helpless in this behalf. The gods and goddesses representing the lower powers of the Supreme Being also have, as stated before, to wait for human birth before they can attain to the highest. Those souls which have not come under the protection of a genuine master or a Sant Satguru still carry the heavy load of the Sanchit, Kriyaman, and Pralabdha karmas on them. As for the destiny or the Pralabdha, the uninitiated into the science of the beyond get but a scant relief, for they have to tolerate these in full intensity with no relieving feature. As for the kriyaman, or deeds done during one's present lifetime, by following the dictates of the mind, they will, without fail, have to reap in full measure the fruit thereof. This is a stringent and inexorable law, whether you believe in it or not. There is no exception to the law of karma, and relentlessly it works, grinding all alike in the treadmill of time. Our actions, good or evil, will be brought before his court, and by our own deeds shall we move higher or be cast into the depths. Those who have communed with the Word, their toil shall end, and their faces shall flame with glory. Not only shall they have salvation, O Nanak, but many more shall find freedom with them. It is therefore of paramount importance that we should seek a master competent to wind up the otherwise endless cycle of karmas and seek refuge at his lotus feet and free ourselves of the bewitching influence of our deeds. And that ends chapter 5 in the Wheel of Life. Next, I'm going to read from the teachings of Kirpal Singh, beginning with the chapter called Gurudev, radiant form of the Master. Once the mind has been brought under control and it no longer doubts and wavers, then the radiant form of the Master appears within. There is no difference between it and the physical form. It is like a reflection in a clear mirror. But so long as the glass is not clear, nothing can be seen reflected. The mind was indeed a glass, which when sullied by the muck flow of worldly attachments, blurred and hid everything. But the moment this film was cleansed, it imaged the universal in itself. The term Gurudev, therefore, signifies the self-luminous form of the Master, which is free from and far above his physical body, and which the Spirit actually perceives with its inner subtle light. When the Spirit comes face to face with the Astral Master, all doubts vanish, and its labors get the crowning regard, the summum bonum of life. This subtle form, disengaged from the bodily form of the Guru, is termed Gurudev. It is self-luminous and lustrous, with light extending over miles and miles. Satguru, or the Master of Truth, is the power of truth, or God, that works through both Guru and Gurudev. With roots firmly embedded in Sat, or truth, he directly derives his inspiration from the eternal and unchangeable permanence, Sat. Hence, is known as Sat Guru. Gurudev meets and greets the Spirit as it crosses the border lying between the physical and subtle regions by passing through the stars, the sun, and the moon, spoken of in the Vedas as Divyan and Pitriyan margs, or paths. This astral form is exactly like the physical form of the Master, but much more beautiful, luminous, and magnetic. Guru Nanak refers to this illuminated path thus: the luminous form of the Master is wondrously enrapturing and enchanting. Only a perfect Master can manifest this to a spirit. This lustrous form of the Master always accompanies a spirit in the various planes, ending with Sachkhand, or the home of truth. When his luminous form descends to the focus of the eyes, a devotee has nothing more to strive for. Herein lies the devotion of the devotee. Half his success has been achieved, and hereafter the Master's astral form takes over the charge of the spirit with full responsibility for leading it to the final goal. Even the saints also adore this form and derive ecstatic delight from it. The manifestation of Gurudev depends purely on the grace of God and one's special merits in one's progress on the spiritual path. There is hardly any need to imagine or visualize the Master's form while engaged in Simran. Any such attempt is likely to scatter the attention. Then there is another danger in doing so. What form you conjure up will be a make-believe, a projection of your mind, and not reality. When one is initiated, the Master resides in the initiate for all time. What is already inside will automatically come into view when you get in there fully and completely, though it may take quite some time to adjust yourself to the new surroundings, unknown before. God manifests of himself more fully in some human form in which he is working without any visualization. It is really a happy day for an initiate to meet his or her radiant master within. The enjoining by the master of regular meditations and stressing the need for living a life of love and purity are intended to make the way clear for the initiates. It is not their efforts alone that will bring them success in their uphill task, but the loving and willing surrender and faithful repose with which they sit and obey the commands. Once the soul had won access to the master in his radiant form within, its major task was over. The rest was a matter of time. It could, of course, be taken directly to higher planes by the Satguru, but he worked out the progress gradually otherwise, as was the case with an insistent pundit. The shock and strain of it would be too great. When you join the master inside, you will be able to perceive all things from the beginning to eternity. The master talks with his disciple face to face in all the planes and gives him wise counsel in times of need. A disciple should never be content until he or she contacts the master within, face to face, in his luminous form, and talks to him as one ordinarily does without. You should gather up all your thoughts to gain this end as early as possible, for then alone all your worries will come to an end. The next chapter is difficulties in meditation. Why is it so difficult to hear Shabd? Shabd is reverberating in all universes, seen or unseen. The human soul and holy Shabd are at the same divine essence. Those who develop their inner consciousness by regular, faithful, and accurate meditations can listen to this heavenly melody anytime they choose to do so. The novices do feel some trouble in focusing their attention at the eye center and controlling their vibrations and thoughts carefully. Besides, those who speak much and waste their precious energy in idle and loose talk cannot listen to this heavenly melody. It is the inner single-minded devotion and attention which grants this rapturous listening. Practice undertaken with perseverance and steadfastness invokes divine grace, and the initiate can listen to the holy Shabdun. It is the scattered attention of the initiate which does not allow him to hear the holy sound current. Besides, the overwhelming attachment to worldly pleasures and sense gratification stand in the way. The living master is love personified, and as such, loving devotion to him is the factor which makes for better inner contact of the audible life stream. It is rather the tendency of human mind, which does not relish being chained, and as such, it requires some discipline to be observed for having an inner conscious contact of the celestial melody. At the outset, it is indeed difficult, but by regular practice, the soul feels an innate affinity with the sound current when inner bliss is experienced with the grace of the master. Question: why does one put off practicing Shabd when it is so very essential for spiritual progress? Answer. Human mind is fashioned as such by providence that it resents silence and stillness at its center, back between the two eyes. It is an agent of the negative power attached to each human soul and relishes externality. It does not relish introversion. Besides, it is fond of sensuous pleasures, which cannot be eschewed easily. It is the gracious protection of the living master that he grants the conscious contact of this heavenly melody. Yet, the satsangis do not pay proper heed to this most important aspect of spiritual discipline. It may be added that the dear ones, who are engrossed in the pursuit of gross pleasures of flesh and matter, seldom take to the holy path. And if perchance some of them may happen to be led to the master and be granted initiation due to some past karmic evolution, they do not relish this spiritual discipline. Human body is just like a radio set wherein these divine melodies are being received by all living. The living master is the one who can repair our damaged sets and grant us the knob and wavelength at which this heavenly song can be heard. Regularity and steadfastness, coupled with untiring selfless service in a spirit of dedication, are the chief helping factors for practicing this spiritual discipline. Mind has a varying set of tricks to unloose on the initiate for evading this listening. Sometimes it poses as a friend to coax the disciple by putting forth family obligations, etc., and the dear one is caught in the noose of attachment. At other times, it stands up in tough fight like a formidable foe. Besides, the temptations of worldly pleasures keep the mind constantly swinging and wavering. The only point where it can find rest is at the eye center, the seat of the soul. The putting off of practicing shab is an age-old malady of the human mind, for which divine grace of the Master is most essential. You are advised to hold fast to your meditations with religious regularity, even if you feel confused on mundane affairs or overtaken by your mind. Please note that these are the tricks of the negative power, which keep the dear ones snared in outer confusion and results in the wastage of precious time at your disposal. Catch time by the forelock and never relax your mind to be indulgent in gloom or sadness. It is during these moments of sheer bliss and harmony when your soul is charged with divine impulses and new vistas of right understanding open for your gratuitous joy. At present, every soul has, on account of constant association with mind, acquired a tendency to flow downward and outward through the outgoing faculties. It is because of this that she cannot catch the sound current, the elixir of life within. A cup turned upside down may, for ages, remain in the rain, but not a drop will fall into it. But if it is turned aright, it will get filled up in one or two showers. Exactly is it the case with the soul. As soon as the master soul gives her a contact with a life-giving sound current by turning it aright through the withdrawal of the sensory current, the lotus-like cup of the spirit gets more and more water of immortality until she gets drenched through and through and is saved forever. And I will stop here, and I will continue reading this chapter at a future time. I finished reading chapter 5 from the Wheel of Life, and then read in the teachings of Kirpal Singh the chapters Gurudev and Difficulties in Meditation on Hearing Shabd. Thank you, gracious Master.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. There were 55 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So thank you for your affording this opportunity of snatching away your time from your busy hours to just have a patient hearing what I have come to know. So I thank you all for all.